Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewable. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, good evening. Now, a minute and a half past the hour, and we begin this Tuesday evening edition of The Horn with a realization on my part. Everything is making so much sense now. It's aliens. No, really. It's aliens. One of the stories that I had in the stack, and it was not a Moran Monday nominee, it was just a story in the stack. One of the stories I had in the stack last night was this Stephen Hawking story that's out there. Headline, Stephen Hawking, Humans Should Fear Aliens. And I didn't get to the story, and in a way I'm glad, because... And this is no sort of mysticism or anything. It's just a matter of things requiring a little bit of time to sort of rattle around inside the remnants of what remain of my brain before connections get made. And that's this. The connection is this. It's aliens. It's the aliens. All of these things, all of this weirdness, all of this bizarreness, it's the aliens. They walk among us. Really. It's that old Twilight Zone episode, the monsters are due on Maple Street, only they're really here. The story, of course, first. From over at Huffington Post. World-renowned scientist Stephen Hawking believes extraterrestrial life almost certainly exists. And humans should be extremely cautious about interacting with it. Reaching a conclusion similar to that reached by Carl Sagan before him, that's my observation, not from the article, Stephen Hawking said to my, and I'm not going to do the little machine voice, I have too much respect for Stephen Hawking, so if that's what you were expecting, You 6666 people, just forget it. No, this is not the Family Guy. Nah, you're not 6666 people. You just know me too well. That's what it boils down to. Anyway, Hawking said, to my mathematical brain, the numbers alone make thinking about aliens perfectly rational. Apparently, there's a new TV series coming up on the Discovery Channel. You know, the same people who are hosting. Can you imagine this? Have I got this right? Is this marble rattling in the right places in the big pachinko game that is my head? The Discovery Channel is going to host a series featuring Stephen Hawking called Stephen Hawking's Universe. And they're also hosting a series called Sarah Palin's Alaska. If I got that right. Anyway, Hawking says, to my mathematical brain, the numbers alone make thinking about aliens perfectly rational. The real challenge is to work out what aliens might actually be like. And then this is the pull quote from the Discovery Channel release. He suggests that aliens might simply raid Earth for its resources and then move on. We only have to look at ourselves to see how intelligent life might develop into something we wouldn't want to meet. I imagine they might exist in massive ships, having used up all the resources from their home planet. Such advanced aliens would perhaps become nomads, looking to conquer and colonize whatever planets they can reach. He concludes that trying to make contact with alien races is a little too risky. He said, if aliens ever visit us, I think the outcome would be much as when Christopher Columbus first landed in America, which didn't turn out very well for the Native Americans. He has a point. No getting around it. I think the law of averages, although I'm no mathematician, but I would suspect that the law of averages would sort of say that there are as many, if there is indeed alien life out there, that there are as many species less developed than us as there are more developed than us. What I think is interesting, however, is Hawking's observation about merely the casually horrifying nature of contact. Because while there were some Europeans who actively went about the business of poisoning the native population of the Western Hemisphere, it was as much a function of negligence as it was of overt evil. The Europeans lived in a universe in which they simply assumed that everybody had smallpox, that everybody got the measles, that everybody got chickenpox, that everybody suffered from the flu. Sadly, and to the chagrin of the native populations, that was not true. Most of that stuff was unknown, absolutely unknown to the native populations of North and South America, or whatever it was that the native peoples called it in the case of the Mexica, in Kemenahuac, in the heart of the one world. Didn't exist. The Bible people, the biblical literalists and the lunatic Mormons are looking for means whereby to note that, well, you know, the Mormons are looking for ancient Jews hiding out in Indian tribes. I forget if they're Nephites or morons or, you know, whatever the Mormons consider them to be. And, of course, there was a lot of that running out throughout the rest of Western culture as it came here. And it never dawned on them. It never dawned on them at all that what they had stumbled on was Eden. Eden itself. Never. But think about it. No sickness of any of the Western, of any of the European sorts, none. If a person didn't get bitten by a poisonous snake or eaten by some other animal or have some childhood fever arising out of the swamps or some such, or break a major bone falling off a cliff or whatever, they had a very good likelihood of living a rich and full life. And that applies to peoples all up and down the continents. These few little words from Stephen Hawking are pregnant with ideas. Of course, I'm not surprised by that, because that's the nature of the man's mind. I'm told he's a bit of an ass in terms of personality, but you know what? When your brain is that honed that sharp, putting up with people who want to talk about the workaday world, words are tough for Stephen Hawking. I wouldn't have any patience for them either. But this thing is pregnant with ideas. He suggests that aliens might simply raid Earth for its resources and then move on. Now, where would he come up with that idea? He has no empirical data from alien race behavior with which to make that judgment. Stephen Hawking can only reach that conclusion based on observation of human conduct. And he acknowledges it. We only have to look at ourselves to see how intelligent life might develop into something we wouldn't want to meet. And the idea of massive ships having used up all the resources from their home planet, nomadic in nature, looking to conquer, colonize, and consume whatever planets they can reach. It's not a far-out prospect. It's actually got more rational basis behind it than the stuff posited by a factory worker from Pascagoula who says, and then they put the anal probe in. I can't imagine that aliens would be interested in that. But then again, it's based on, you have to go back to Hawking's basis of application to human conduct and extrapolation therefrom. The semi-sober dock worker in Pascagoula was anal probed, and Republicans in Oklahoma want to vaginal probe pregnant women. It is an extrapolative exercise, isn't it? You do know about the Oklahoma story, I assume. In an effort to cut down on the loss of precious little fetal tissues, any woman seeking an abortion in the state of Oklahoma has to get a vaginal probe stuffed up her hoo-hoo so as they can take pictures of the fetus and show it to the prospective murderess. No. Really. Not kidding. The Oklahoma legislature passed that piece of lawmaking by a, sit down, veto-proof majority. That is, as if the Oklahoma governor would veto such a thing. No medical necessity whatsoever. Arguably, because it's done with massive bombardments of sound waves, horrifying to the little fetus. Being hit with wave after wave of sonic shock. And if that little fetus is indeed capable of thought, making the first thought of the little fetus's mind, please let me die! No, Oklahoma really does want to do that. Complete with all the inherent risks of having such a thing done. And it has to be done with a vaginal probe. It cannot be done with the little thing that looks like a Norelco electric razor that goes across the belly. It has to be done with the vaginal probe. Like I said, suddenly, Stephen Hawking makes a hell of a lot of sense. and we're dealing with aliens among us. They are already here. Human beings have normal facial expressions, don't they? Whether it be pain or pleasure, joy or grief. Human beings have real facial expressions. Consider the photo of Don Blankenship that I referenced a couple of days ago, if you can still access it, on my Facebook account. As I noted in last night's program, he stands rubbing his hands together like Pilate or like Montgomery Burns. Or maybe he's clapping, but his eyes are the same dead cast as they are at any other time he has ever pictured. Because he is unable to experience human emotions. And if the aliens are already among us, perhaps it is because Don Blankenship is an alien. Nothing but pure consumptive lizard brain, sort of faking its way through its existence and pretending at the business of being human. And there's lots of them all around us. If you consider that paragraph from the story about Dr. Hawking's TV program hosted by the Discovery Channel, it is hard not to realize that perhaps, as much as surprised as we might be to realize it, it's hard not to realize that maybe we're Pandora. Perhaps we are the planet being plundered. And perhaps aliens like Don Blankenship are the ones doing it. We're just not 9.5 feet tall and blue. Because if it was an alien race that was seeking to infiltrate us, you wouldn't want to come down here like the candidate, being all 9.5 feet tall. No. You'd want to look just like us. Only there would have to be some flaws, and of course the flaws are in the eyes. You remember the scene in Blade Runner where Rutger Hauer goes into the laboratory of the doctor who says, "I just do eyes. I just do eyes." Because the eyes tell all. Oh, you Nexus 6, I make you eyes. I don't mean to, you know, maybe this is a little... It just sort of dawned on me and made sense for a variety of reasons that will maybe become clearer throughout the course of the program. David in Tennessee noting, then if he's not an alien, Blankenswine is actually a great white shark at heart. Think back to Jaws and remember that oh-so-scary description of those dead eyes. I had a series of correspondences with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner down in Texas earlier today. I sent him that same photograph of Don Blankenship, either doing the pilot, the Montgomery Burns, or some sort of half-hearted clapping at the Miners Memorial on Sunday. because there's a lot of pictures of Blankenship out there, but there was something about that one that just struck me as being particularly dead. And Rick wrote back. And he said, Bob, you ready to walk on the dark side? I'm about to show you what you knew but did not know you knew it. I'm going to show you what you were feeling when you saw Blankenship's photo. Open the two photos I have attached here and compare them with the photo you sent me. Now you can understand why babies who have never been around a snake still knows to fear the snake. And what Rick Goodner had attached to his email for me were a pair of photos in totally different circumstances of Saddam Hussein. In one, Saddam Hussein is surrounded by people manifesting all, you know, real human beings, manifesting all manner of human emotion. There are women, primarily women, in the background of this photograph. They clutch their hands together, they clap, they smile joyfully. One looks away, covering her ears from the noise of Saddam shooting the rifle in the air. Another one looks toward him with her hands clasped and an air of expectant hope upon her face. Another cradles an infant. But Saddam Hussein's eyes are dead. Dead to it all. Rick noting, enlarging the photos, you will see the same snake eyes, a sociopath, dead, cold, heartless. And what we are dealing with here is either sociopathy or an alien who is utterly incapable of manifesting true human emotion. It was astonishing to me. It's also interesting, in the article, it notes that Stephen Hawking has argued previously that humans must colonize space in order to survive and thrive. He said sooner or later disasters such as an asteroid collision or a nuclear war could wipe us all out. But once we spread out into space and establish independent colonies, our future should be safe. Mars needs Republicans! Nah, let's leave them here. Let's leave them here to flounge about in the toxic soup that they so eagerly yearn for. Another day has gone by. Another 42,000 gallons of toxic crude have pumped into the Gulf of Mexico, headed, as it will, for the nearest landmass. Day in, day out, the planet aches. And perhaps it is, that these captains of industry all along have been some sort of alien seed trying to take root in the planet. And they're not all Don Blankenship. They're not all ExxonMobil or BP executives. No, hell no. They walk among us through all manner and all strata of society. In Virginia, the Old Dominion, the right-wing fundamentalist freak governor who graduated from Pat Robertson University, Bob McDonnell, earlier signed legislation allowing concealed carry permit holders to carry their loaded handguns into establishments that serve booze. Contained specifically within the law is language that says that they may carry said firearms strapped to their hides in restaurants in Virginia, quote, as long as the holders do not consume alcohol. It wasn't enough, and the aliens are making it plain that it wasn't enough. The gun freaks in Old Virginia are arguing that the law that allows people to carry loaded handguns into restaurants that serve alcohol, but that the carriers of said weapons may not consume alcohol, stigmatizes law-abiding gun owners. Because they contend that there is an exception in the law that, quote, allows law enforcement officers and Commonwealth attorneys to carry concealed weapons and consume alcohol. Virginia Citizens Defense League leader and alien Philip Van Cleve has whined, we're not allowed to drink, but the law enforcement officials can. That's two classes of citizens. But he's got a proposal, this alien Van Cleve. He proposes a bill that says anyone can carry a concealed gun and drink if they wish, as long as they are not drunk. Whatever the General Assembly assumes will apply to everyone. Police officers and permit holders are all in the same tent. So I say, General Assembly, you choose. But whatever it is, we're equal. You know what? They'll get their way. And you thought it was creepy just going to a Starbucks where people are armed to the teeth getting jacked on Java. Wait till you walk in to your local Applebee's and there's a guy with a .44 Magnum sitting at the bar swilling Brutuses and mumbling, well, do you feel lucky? Do you, punk? It's going to be a nice day. Cops are a-loving it. How else would you... How else would you begin to... Listen, this is one of those Sherlock Holmes moments. Once you have eliminated the impossible, whatever is left, no matter how improbable, is the answer. And I am here to say to you that though it may sound improbable, brothers and sisters, it's aliens. It's aliens. And this, of course, is The Horn, America's listener-supported liberal voice. We'll be right back. Your calls to 877-443-2366 on your nickel 304-658-3333. Stick around.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you. This is ground control to Major Tom. You really made the grade. And the papers want to know.
Was kind of easy, wasn't it? I don't know. Were you expecting it? But there's probably more. I don't know. Maybe we're on a space kick tonight. Because see, I do agree, and it's one of those points of departure that I have with Barack Obama. I agree that manned spaceflight is necessary. It is not a luxury. It is not an adventure. We'd best get busy. Because as you know, I happen to live in a place that is a laboratory for just how much unbridled capitalism can screw up a place when it is allowed to do so. And we would be well advised to start looking for another place to live, because the alien Don Blankenship and the alien Bobby Ray Inman and all the other corporate aliens are going to run us off this planet. Oh, they'll have happy little bubbles to live in. But we'll be out here in the swamps and the marshes and the mountains, with baby arms growing out of our heads. If we don't. Okay? But that's not where it all ends. We've got more aliens, and we've got also an opportunity to turn away from turn our outward gaze away and bring the focus back in on some earthbound weirdos. Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. I could save this for prayer meeting, but I'm not a gonna. So, that's out. The stupid's out there. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, it is. For now, however, you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333 on your own hook if you wish to do it that way. Email to bobkincaid@gmail.com, and we will go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Oh, just quickly here. You know, strangely enough, by irony, I just received in the mail today Hawking's book, A Brief History of Time, 10th edition, and I can see that that is going to be a fairly slow read.
I've taken that ride, Jim. I took it some several years ago, and while I don't feel overly prideful about whatever it is that passes for my reading comprehension, generally I can rip through a book pretty quick and get the gist of most of it. That was one of those books, and there are several of them out there. That was one of those books that I would read a sentence and go back and read the sentence and go back and then read individual words. The thing is, it's conceptually an attempt to put his thinking into layman's language.
Exactly.
Which he does.
I think Sir Francis Bacon once said about books, some are to be devoured, some nibbled, some thrown away. But this is one that has to be ingested very, very slowly. And it's just incredible the type of mental processes that have produced that book.
Well, if you find yourself, Jim, able to grasp the stuff that's in there, and it's no insult on my part to say if, because it was, like I said, I was challenged as well and remain challenged. There's another one that you might want to go after later, and I can't remember the physicist's name. She's a beautiful woman, and someone will send me an email in a minute telling me her name. But the name of the book itself is Warped Passages. And that one, too, will make the marbles rattle between your ears.
Okay, I'll have to try that. May I go back into an earlier comment that you made, please?
You certainly may. You may do anything you wish.
When the white men came to America, they did bring a host of pathogens with them. But conversely, the Indians, if I'm not mistaken, also gave them a present, too. Venereal diseases and things like that, they were unknown before the contact was established between East and West.
There is some evidence and of a considerable nature that that is true. It is not, however, based on my reading of the evidence, it's not entirely conclusive. There may have been a more virulent strain may have come from the New World to the Old, and the evidence is largely anecdotal and circumstantial as to timing. One disease, and I know you know about this disease. One disease that both hemispheres shared, oddly enough, was leishmaniasis.
Oh yes.
Spread by a fly.
Sand flies.
And horribly disfiguring. And in fact, there is a body of work and a school of thought that suggests that what is generally referred to in old world ancient literature as leprosy, as it crops up in the Bible, among other things, is in fact leishmaniasis, because it is disfiguring. It eats the face. If I understand some New World stuff, the novelist Gary Jennings is to be believed, the phrase for it in the New World was the being eaten alive by the gods.
The British referred to that as Dum Dum's disease. And during the first Gulf War, I was a medical actions officer, and I had to deal with that stuff. And I have seen people with it. I mean, I have seen a 250-pound man coming back from the first Gulf War go down to 90 pounds before he finally expired.
Mercy.
Too familiar with leishmaniasis and how horrible. And those sand flies, their mandibles are like little buzz saws. When they bite you, they can literally just drill a hole the way no other insect can. It's just incredible. And they found this stuff in the drinking water over there, and that's one of the reasons they were trying to get people to send water and stuff to the troops over in Southwest Asia during the first Gulf conflict. But unfortunately, some of those boys, just when their bottles were empty, filled it up from the local water against the advice of medical authorities. It's a horrible thing. And I dealt with it back in the early 90s. And I can tell you, you'll never forget it if you see someone with it.
And by the way, as I predicted, a host of separate emails have just rolled in telling me that Lisa Randall, Jim, is the author of Warped Passages.
Right. There's something else I wanted to share with you and ask you about. You know, if aliens were to invade this planet, what happened to the Martians in the War of the Worlds could happen to them. I mean, yes, that blade cuts two ways.
Yeah, we could be that toxic.
Well, we could have pathogens and things to which their immune systems have no defense, and that's what took care of the Martians in H.G. Wells' book, and that could happen too. But I can tell you one thing, and this is the last that I'll say about the aliens. Could you imagine if the aliens did come to this planet looking for intelligent life, and they picked up Sarah Palin and took her back? Boy, would their bosses be pissed.
You know, the minute that you mentioned that, Jim, I had two competing thoughts. Yours, man, would their boss be pissed? Or the other, we would learn a lot about the aliens when they took her back and made her their high queen of civilization.
Well,
but either way, with her being removed from planet Earth, it's a win-win for us, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I wish they would just pick her up and take her far, far away. People like them, you know? And, you know, as far as these people like Don Blankenship and being aliens, they are what your porn psychologist, I think, Mr. Goodner, said. These people, their souls are dead. They are sociopaths. They are incapable of sustaining any type of normal human relationship with any other human being. And that's how far they have removed themselves to their own greed, their own avarice. They have literally killed their own sense of conscience. They have no conscience.
None.
Look into their eyes. I mean, I've looked into Blankenship's eyes in photographs, pictures of Stalin, Hitler, Pol Pot, Saddam Hussein, and you can almost see what I call the 10,000-meter stare. There's nothing there. and the eyes were the well of the soul, and their wells had been completely drained by their own horrible activities while God has allowed them to inhabit this earth.
You know, I've seen those eyes personally, as in within the proximity of the inside of an elevator car. And they are as, and it is not a trick of photography, Jim.
I know.
They are as dead there at 3 feet as they are in any in any photographic reproduction. And it is when you run up on one of those people, it's strange.
It's almost like looking into the eyes of a cobra.
It's like looking at something that isn't from Earth. It isn't human.
No, they don't care. I mean, like I say, they have killed whatever spark of humanity with which they were born, if they even had that. I don't know.
And the funny thing is, I don't care how good an actor you are, you cannot do that. You cannot make yourself appear that way. Because the spark of life absolutely insists on manifesting itself. You can't do that.
In some form of humanity or compassion or just simple regard for your fellow man or other creatures around you. You know, that's the way I perceive it. They're not aliens. They're sociopaths. And, you know, I'll guarantee you, Don Blankenship could take a polygraph test and lie his ass off and pass it with flying colors.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. That's how it is that he managed to get on the stand under oath and do the same thing, which he has done.
Because there are people who can beat that machine, and the people who can beat that machine basically have a way of just being able to not have any involuntary response. And, you know, that's the way I have I've read in the literature about that. But I don't have a whole lot to say tonight, but I thank you for taking my call.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Jim. You have yourself a wonderful evening.
And to you too, sir.
Bye now. That's our buddy Jim, and we roll onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hi, how's it going, Fancy?
Hey, when you got started in about Hawking's or A Wrinkle in Time, I've often, you know, said it's very difficult to raise children who are more intelligent than you are, and I was blessed with that, and it's a wonderful but somewhat questionable blessing. And my son at one point had decided he was going to major in physics, so I read Hawking, because I mean, what do you talk to him about? It's up to me to find the place there. I did not find it difficult. I was just tickled pink because I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's something. He was writing to some, he wasn't writing to physicists. He was writing to me. You know, a fine arts major, somebody who could kind of go, oh, yeah, well, that makes sense. So I was very happy. Don't scare people off on the Hawking book because it's.
No, I'm not trying to, but it's not a summer beach book.
And see, I found it pretty much that way. Now, I wasn't scrutinizing, but I found, you know, if you've got questions there, gentle listener, check it out of the library, read the first chapter. If it's uncomfortable, you can take it back. But I think you'll just be delighted, because I certainly was.
Oh, it was absolutely, I mean, it remains on the list of things that absolutely grabbed me, Fancy. But, it was...
At one point, I had something else there. Say, you know about TED Talks.
Yes.
And for the listeners who don't, TED Talks is brilliant. TED Talks are geniuses limited to 18 minutes to discuss whatever. And sometimes it's funny, sometimes... It's just a marvelous thing. Just if you're diddling around with a computer, get yourself over to TED Talks.
Yeah, it's TED.org, I believe.
And it's great. But the only one, and I have seen some, I do about two a week just to, you know, keep my brain alive. But the Hawking TED Talk runs a little bit of time because they actually recorded it ahead of time on that wonderful talking machine of his. And it's just great. So it runs longer than 18 minutes, but worth every minute of it. And now, the second thought. Have you checked email in the last few minutes?
Yes, I have.
Okay, there's a Dave Carter song in there called Gentle Arms of Eden. I gave you the URL for that.
Okay, yeah, I see that.
Okay, now, gentle listeners are not going to hear Dave Carter on commercial radio, but this is just a lovely, lovely song. And I think of it as a, I'm losing words again, when you're not teaching creationism, you are teaching...
Evolution?
Evolution. I think of Gentle Arms of Eden as an evolutionary hymn. It's just beautifully done and celebrates. When you were talking, I got, bumper on this one, has to go. So please find, bring it up, and if we can play it.
I've got it. I have it queued right here, and it will lead us into...
Yeah, he does a minute and 10 seconds of introduction. He had just written that when the video was done. But lovely piece to what the conversation started with tonight. Now, I have always said, and the other obligatory reference, to serve mankind.
Yes, that's what I was talking about when I mentioned the Canimid.
Oh, okay.
That was the name of the 8-foot-tall alien race that came with their little book, To Serve Man.
To Serve Man.
It's a cookbook.
It's a cookbook. Yeah, I had a family that...
I was going to say the obvious parallels between that and the Republican platform, but you know me.
It is. I've always said if the spaceship landed in my backyard and there was any decency about me at all, I would run out and say, hey, guys, thanks for visiting. Now, if you're looking for an advanced race, we're not it. And I belong to a race that is so treacherous that we will convince ourselves that it's our job to vivisect you and try to convince you that it's a good idea, too. So, check out there in Alpha Centauri or someplace a little more advanced, because it's not us.
This ain't that, you're in the backwaters. This is not the neighborhood.
We are not the droids you are looking for.
Right. We are on the wrong side of the galactic tracks.
Yes.
There's nothing here to consume. There's nothing here to steal, because, frankly, we've already plundered our own planet.
Yeah, we've plundered pretty well.
I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what it is, Fancy. We need a satellite in space on the furthest margins of Earth orbit with a big blinking light in binary code that says, don't drink the water.
Whoa.
I love where you take me with this kind of stuff.
That is so good. That's so good. Did you get my other email where I have a... planning your summer trip?
Yes, I did. I did receive that.
Okay. Well, we'll go see where Dillinger. There was a third story on that hotel, and when it caught fire, the Dillinger gang was on the third story, and they said to the fireman, "Here's some money. There's some suitcases. Save those suitcases." And so the Dillinger gang was saved by the Tucson police, Tucson Fire Department, when the Congress Hotel caught fire.
I'll be darned.
That's a very interesting history there, and hopefully I get to share an hour of it with you.
Well, we will wait to see how it all plays out. In fact, I've been involved in discussions today about how we go about getting there.
Well, you're safe coming that initial plan that you had. You're going to be safe on the roads. That's not a problem. I would tell you not to bring money to Arizona, advising. You know what's going to happen on this thing? We've talked about it before, but there are so many families who are both sides of the border, and have lived that way for generations. And we're going to start hearing things about, well, the wedding had to go on without Aunt Mercedes and the men, and bridesmaid number two, because they were held up by local law enforcement because their papers weren't in order. We're going to see that. Now, I tend to think that what's happening now is what happened, palace to saying is that it's just to intimidate Hispanic voters.
Certainly it is. But are they that, honest to God, Fancy, are they that tone deaf? Do they not know that this will not intimidate, but will in fact energize and radicalize and mobilize Hispanic voters?
From your mouth to God's ears.
Gets all over. And by the way, in case people were thinking that this was an exclusively Arizona sort of problem, the answer to that would be no. There is a white supremacist group out there. You're going to love this.
I'm already salivating.
There is a white supremacist group out there. The lead lawyer for whom is boasting, not merely commenting or quietly mentioning, but boasting that he had a big hand in drafting the law. And he ain't from Arizona. He is, in fact, from, you know, everybody queue up, he is from Kansas.
It's interesting that the locals are down there. And we had an honest-to-goodness tragedy down in Cochise County, which is on the border. A rancher was killed in the last few months. And the speculation is that the rancher was shot by a illegal who then went back across the border. And that's a legitimate tragedy. But when you were doing the wonderful accent the other day of the guy who's he wants to recruit folks with a kill record.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't locals.
No, he's from Alabama, Arizona. Actually, he's from Pennsylvania, Alabama, Arizona.
Somebody on the radio this morning, and I'm not sure who, I wasn't paying that much attention. It may have been on Stephanie's show, but they made the point. If a state had said law enforcement must check the legality of firearms, you know, okay, it's all right for you to have a firearm and you can carry it into a bar, but is it registered? Was it bought legally? Do you have the proper papers on it? We'll come into your house and check. You would hear screaming from here to there and back.
It's the absolute, yes, from your mouth to God's ear.
If the same thing happened that said it is incumbent upon all law enforcement officers to check the legality of all firearms encountered in Starbucks or the in and out quickie beer palace, you would just hear an incredible Second Amendment screaming, yelling, and what have you.
Outcry. Hue and cry.
Indeed. Yeah. This is all just. And, of course, you know my theory on that, that one who carries a sidearm is pretty much announcing to the world that they have inadequacies.
That the world can't see through the clothing.
And the other is that they're frightened. These people are so frightened they can't leave the house without being armed.
Right, and that's the thing. Those scared people, I'm not authoritarian. I'm really not. But I'm not I expect cops to carry guns because gun carrying is part of what being an American cop is about. And I also know, because I know people who are in law enforcement, the rigorous training that they undergo before they are ever allowed to strap one on. And I know that if a law enforcement officer unholsters his weapon, he intends to kill something. And it likely will not go back in the holster before something is dead. So there are fairly clearly delineated rules because, you know, I do occupy a position of white privilege in this country, that if I'm around a cop who pulls his gun, something really, really bad has happened. But these compensators, these blue steel masturbators, who have to carry those carry firearms in order to be secure.
I'm getting a poster today for that phrase.
Oh, well, thank you.
Blue steel masturbators. Yes, two toasters.
Oh boy, I like the ones that are wide enough to
accommodate.
Yeah, I like the ones that are wide enough to accommodate, you know, the broad slices of rye bread, and yet broad enough in the other direction to accommodate a bagel.
Yeah, that was the blue steel. That was beautiful. That was a beautiful piece.
Well, you know, it's kind of like speaking in tongues. I have no control over it. And apparently you, Fancy, have been given the gift of prophecy this evening.
I have.
Or interpretation, not prophecy, interpretation.
But
those people are dangerous because they will, unlike the highly trained law enforcement professional, they will pull that thing for any reason or no reason. And they are empowered to do so by states like Florida that have laws that say if the brown man scares you, you may kill him.
Now, my sister-in-law lives up in Phoenix, and she lives in a condo of, you know, it's like a planned community set up. Very nice, little walking trails, and very pleasant, and the neighbors are pleasant. However, there's one neighbor who, one, is armed. He has to wear a sidearm to walk his dog. And his dog is kind of a bulldog, rah, rah, I'm going to eat your face off dog. And this dog has already taken out two cats, because he likes to eat cats. And so they had a meeting about it, and they said, one, he can't wear the sidearm, and two, the dog's got to be muzzled. And he grieved it, and guess what? He doesn't have to muzzle the dog, and he doesn't have to not wear a sidearm. Because Lord knows, in this retirement community, there, you know, and ha-ha, the dog pulled off the leash and ate a cat or two. So recently, somebody was walking their dog in the morning, and they went out, and the little Yorkie ran out the front door and ran back to the house. Didn't quite make it back to the house because the bulldog ate him. Because the little Yorkie sort of looked like a cat. And the guys, you know, got the great excuse. He pulled the leash out of my hand, couldn't control him, that's happened. And thank you very much. This is Phoenix. The bastard's armed with a pet-eating cat, a bulldog.
And lacks the... And much as they lack the cerebral fortitude to control their weapon, they lack the physical fortitude to control their animals.
Jesus. You know.
I mean, it's same, isn't it, Fancy?
And I'm gonna go in the chat room after I finish talking. If anybody can come up with a good response to this. Thus far, one neighbor says a little poison meat here and there might do the trick.
But other animals eat that too.
Yeah, yeah. It's you know, can you imagine living in a place where the neighbors are armed and dangerous?
Well, see, Fancy, that sort of takes me in another direction with regard to this Arizona law. There is significant, if the film footage is to be believed, there is significant opposition to this law. And I don't know if it's a matter of we have forgotten how to do nonviolent resistance, or maybe if the teaching just never made it that far west. But the obvious answer to this is to put signs in windows of businesses, because this will not be good for business in Arizona. Put signs in windows of businesses saying, if you support that law, we will not serve you.
Well, okay.
We reserve the right not to serve any person of our choice, and we choose not to serve people who support that law.
I live in Tucson, which is the liberal. Yeah, I, you know, I'm from Texas, and I always say I sort of live in the Austin of Arizona. It's a very similar reality.
Okay.
And basically, any small town in Arizona, you're going... Okay, my daughter and son-in-law live in Lake Havasu City, and they're with the community college down there. And a friend of mine was telling me in the newspaper, they've got, what is it, onions and, you know, praise and whatever, and you'll get little things, praise to all my neighbors who such and such. And there was one in there, well, a friend was visiting, and it said, praise to all the businesses that keep Fox News on their TV, so when we shop, we can watch. And this is pretty much, you know, you put that sign.
That wasn't ironic, was it?
No, it's real. Now, I grew up in retail sales. You know, my dad had a shoe store. And I remember at one point I said, you know, I want to put a sticker on my car, a political sticker. And my dad said, whichever way you put it, you're going to alienate half our customers. So, no, this is what you can't do. And so you're not going to have people saying, don't patronize our shop if you have different political views.
But, you know, the sad thing is, it would work. Now, just like Proposition Hate in California, if every gay person in California had refused to have anything to do with anyone who supported Proposition Hate, it would have collapsed within months. Perhaps I'm too much an optimist. I don't know.
No. By God, that would have been, you know, you think about the wedding planning business.
See, I was trying not to go to any stereotypes, but yeah.
I'm going to a stereotype. I've worked in the community. And strangely enough, Arizona is pretty gay friendly. Or at least Tucson is. I've worked with the special interest newspaper here and various things. And there are like whole wedding packages, honeymoon packages and things to beautiful Arizona for gay couples and was 20 years ago.
And see, that's the sad thing. These antediluvian right-wing freaks are determined to undo every good thing that has ever happened in the rights realm of the United States, Fancy. I'm not kidding. I've got a video, and let me mention this real quick. If people will go over to my Facebook page, they will see fairly high up on my wall a video that was shot by our good friend Parson Brown and his video team of the teabagging rally on April 15th in Chicago. It goes to Link TV. If you will go through the painless process of registering at Link TV and giving Parson's video 5 stars, it would be greatly appreciated. But, you know, there's this white guy that says, our forefathers believed everybody is equal. Only he says it with a Chicago accent, which I'm hard-pressed to do. I'm sorry, they're all crackers to me. You know, let me be clear about this, because I've been accused of this on the YouTube video of my takedown of Tim James of bigotry. I am an absolute bigot against ignorance. Fancy, I am an absolute bigot against hatred. I am a bigot against racism. I am a bigot against ethno-bashing. I am a total bigot against anybody who does that. So, yeah, but on Parson's video, there's our forefather and wanted everybody. That's the line. This is very close. It's not a direct quote. It's very close. This cracker ass Chicagoan saying our forefathers wanted everybody to be free. Well, everybody but
Christian and
right and male. Everybody. Yeah, they wanted everybody to be free who was a property owner and white. Women need not apply of any race, and Africans, forget it. Indians didn't even merit on the status of the Africans.
Well, they were critters.
Yeah, right. The Indians were never any good for slaves.
Terrible slaves. They just died.
Yeah.
There's on Columbus Day, Tom Hartman, 2 years in a row, has done just a beautiful show, and he's read from the diary of one of Columbus's sailors, seamen, whatever. And the guy, Columbus gave the guy like a teenage girl. And you know, she wasn't sexually cooperative, so he had to beat her. And he reads this, you know, this piece every year, and I think of, well, I mean, it's self-explanatory.
Oh, well, see, I think West Virginia still has on the books, don't hold me to this, but I think it's still there, that a man may beat his wife, but only on the courthouse steps and only with a rod no thicker than his thumb.
The rule of thumb has been attributed to the monk, Luther.
Martin Luther?
Yeah. The rule of thumb has been attributed to Martin Luther.
Yeah, what the church referred to as that damn drunk potato-eating monk?
Okay, we got to hit my favorite reference here, and I'm not a big TV watcher, but there was a Simpsons, and they were doing the school science project, and Lisa was doing evolution, and in a jar she had her little critters went from kind of cave critters to whatever. And at one point she's checking on them, and the little guy with the bald head in the monk's cowl in the robe, and he comes out and he tacks something up on the wall. And Lisa's statement is, I've created Lutherans.
Oh, with fancy with that, we will close off, dear.
Love and kisses. Bye.
All right, you take care. Bye now. That's Fancy calling from, obviously, Arizona. And your calls are more than welcome. Do dial back in if you feel so inclined. We're going to take our top-of-the-hour break a little bit late right now. Per the suggestion from Fancy, we've got a musical interlude by request coming up. And that will be followed by the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And after that, we'll get after it again. Which probably means that we will start the conversation up again. For those of you who like to hang up or wait until the program comes back to the live open microphone, about half past the hour. In other words, about halfway through the program itself. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Chime right in. It's Conversation Radio, and the conversation is fine. This is the horn.
We're getting better at it. Kind of an eco-spirituality number. It's a
Gentle Arms of Eden.
Gentle Arms of Eden.
See? Told you.
On a sleepy, endless ocean, when the world lay in a dream, there was rhythm in the splash and roll, but not a voice to sing. But the moon shone on the breakers, and the morning warmed the waves, till a single cell did jump and hum for joy, as though to say, this is my home, this is my only home, this is the only sacred ground that I've ever known. Should I stray in the dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden. Then the one shone bright and rounder, till the one turned into two, and the two into 10,000 things, and old things into new. And on some virgin beachhead, one lonesome critter crawled, and he looked about, shouted out in his most astonished drawl, this is my home, this is my only home, this is the only sacred ground that I've ever known. Should I stray in the dark night alone, goddess in the gentle arms of Eden. Then all the sky was humming, and the ground was carpet green, and the weary children of the woods went dancing in between. And the people sang rejoicing when the fields were glad with grain, the song of celebration from their cities on the plain. This is my home, this is my only home, this is the only sacred ground that I've ever known. Should I stray in the dark night alone, rocking goddess in the gym arms of me? Now there's smoke across the harbor, and there's factories on the shore, and the world is ill with greed and will and enterprise of war. But I will lay my burdens in the cradle of your grace, and the shining beaches of your love, and the sea of your embrace. This is my home, this is my only home, this is the only sacred ground that I've ever known. Should I stray in the dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden. Rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden.
Thank you all very much. You're very kind.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, April 27th, 2010.
We cannot bring back the 29 men we lost. They are with the Lord now. Our task here on earth is to save lives from being lost in another such tragedy.
Remembering lives lost to coal. The South is hit with tornadoes and oil spills. Plus,
Lindsey Graham is completely isolated on the Republican side. I think he freaked out a little bit here.
A senatorial hissy fit that could scuttle climate legislation.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This year I was pleasantly surprised to see how the USA Today was celebrating environmental consciousness by printing a special Earth Day bonus pullout. That's right. Suck it, trees.
Yeah, suck it, trees. This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is brought to you by Velvet Revolution's StopTheChamber.com, calling for the arrest of U.S. Chamber of Commerce Director and Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship, following the recent deaths of 29 miners in his company's West Virginia coal mine. Blankenship and Massey were cited thousands of times for safety violations and have so far escaped real accountability. Help VR see Blankenship and other U.S. Chamber of Commerce corporate criminals put behind bars. Sign on and support StopTheChamber.com today. Okay, Desi Doyen, what do you got for us this week?
Cleanup begins after a series of deadly tornadoes swept across the southeast United States over the weekend, leaving a path of destruction from Mississippi to Florida and all the way up to Ohio. 10 people were killed across the state of Mississippi, with the town of Yazoo, Mississippi, the hardest hit. And that line of severe storms across the southeast also impeded cleanup of an oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, you may have heard about that massive oil rig that exploded last week and sank into the ocean. 11 missing workers are now now presumed dead. Officials at first thought the environmental risk would be minimal, but Coast Guard officials now say underwater robotic cameras have discovered a new leak at the well site on the sea floor 5,000 feet down, spilling an estimated 42,000 gallons of crude oil a day. And it's what the Coast Guard is now calling, quote, a very serious spill, and that saying that it could take months to cap.
Any word from the Obama administration as to whether this will affect their newly announced plans for more offshore drilling?
The word from the White House is that it will not affect their plans to expand offshore drilling. And the Houston Chronicle is reporting that a 400-square-mile oil slick is heading toward the fragile ecosystems of the Gulf from Texas to Alabama.
Wonder if it's spreading towards Barack Obama's conscience, but that's for another day.
We're here to memorialize 29 Americans. Carl Acord, Jason Atkins, Christopher Bell.
That was President Obama, who, along with Vice President Joe Biden, both delivered eulogies Sunday at a memorial service for the 29 miners killed in the massive Upper Big Branch mine explosion 3 weeks ago in West Virginia, the worst mining disaster in 40 years.
Certainly, nobody should have to sacrifice their life for their livelihood.
Massey Energy, the controversial mining company that owns the mine, reportedly denied time off for the workers at the mine to attend their co-workers' funerals. The investigation of the Upper Big Branch mine explosion is ongoing and is expected to take several months. Finally, as we mentioned in our reports last week, Monday was supposed to be the big rollout of Senate climate and clean energy legislation. Democratic Senator John Kerry, Independent Joe Lieberman, and Republican Lindsey Graham had been working for months to draft a bill, but over the weekend, Senator Graham announced that he is walking away from the negotiations. Indefinitely postponing the release of the bill and throwing the future of the legislation into doubt. Why? Because media reports say that the White House and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid might push back any climate bill to deal with an immigration overhaul first. In a sternly worded letter sent on Saturday, Senator Graham called the focus on immigration purely political maneuvering. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said he wouldn't allow Senator Graham to dictate the order of legislation. And now White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs said on Monday that it's not an either-or situation, that whichever bill has the support to move forward will move forward first.
So Lindsey Graham, who was the only Republican who was willing to work on this bill, is unhappy because Democrats have decided to put immigration reform first, and so Lindsey Graham's going to take his choice and walk away, and he's not going to deal with it at all this year? Is that what this is about?
That's essentially what's going on. Kate Shepard of Mother Jones reports that on Monday, Senator Graham emerged from a meeting with Kerry and Lieberman, saying he, quote, doesn't want to play politics, but he also indicated he does not want an immigration bill to come up at all this year, even if climate legislation comes first.
Of course he doesn't want to play politics. Meanwhile, his very good friend John McCain is out there in Arizona facing a tough primary battle, and I suspect old Lindsey may be playing some politics here himself by fighting to keep immigration reform off the calendar, because that's a fight John McCain has lost before, and he may well lose it again in his primary with teabag candidate J.D. Hayworth. Read more about that, and let us know your opinion on that and much more we didn't get to today at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Does that make me crazy?
Looking that that stone would bring me so much pain. I'd go into town wearing my finest clothes, turn these tears into blood and make it hot ice cold. Space City's 1 hour up the road for me. It's 1 hour away from as close to the moon as anybody down here's ever gonna be. Somewhere beyond that big white light is where my heart is gone. Somewhere she's wandering, it's taking me so long.
Magnificent album, A Blessing and a Curse. That, of course, the Drive-By Truckers and Space City. Wow. Nobody out there doing lyrics like they're doing lyrics. Just not. And we go straight to the phones at this juncture. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Got a question for you. You know, about something, well, actually, it's a suggestion. Something the people of Arizona can do in the way of protest that's nonviolent, it's cheap, and it doesn't require you to do anything out of the ordinary with one exception. Do you remember the King of Denmark in World War II?
Do expand upon it, because no.
Okay. The Germans invaded Denmark and took it over with the help of a Quisling. And, of course, the very first thing they did afterwards was implement the laws pertaining to Jews. Now, the King of Denmark wasn't having any of that crap. So he put out the word, and the very next day, next morning, the King of Denmark, everyone in his court, and everyone in Copenhagen was walking around with the Star of David on his coat. Hanging on down. Everybody.
That's, yeah.
Really kicked off the Germans.
In fact, I saw I saw some comment, and I forget who it was. I think it was the Rude Pundit, as a matter of fact, who said, if Arizona... Oh, I love Rude. I just do. I think he said, you know, if Arizona really wants to get serious about this, just get everybody to wear a star sewn to their coat.
Yeah, okay, but the point is, here's something that people can do as protest. Doesn't matter if you're black, Hispanic, white. Although if you are Hispanic or black, I suggest you make sure you have your birth certificate on you at all times you're doing this. If you're white, well, whatever. In fact, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea for that way either. Walk around wearing a sticker that says, I'm here illegally.
That would create at least ostensible probable cause, wouldn't it?
Yep. Now, can you imagine me walking around in, say, Phoenix with a sticker that says, I'm here illegally? I'm like you. Some of my ancestors came to this country. Well, let me put it this way. They didn't want to come. The Brits brought them here after Culloden.
Well, yeah, and I mentioned last night that thing that was on the History Channel, the true history of hillbillies, as hosted by Billy Ray Cyrus. But it did make some overtures to explaining why the Scots-Irish are the Scots-Irish, because it explained the fact that the British dealt with their little border problem with Scotland by opening up land that they didn't own in Northern Ireland for the Scots to go and take over there, but they found themselves in nasty circumstances with the locals, and after about 100 years looked up and said, well, this ain't working, and took ship to the colonies. And what's if Billy Ray Cyrus's writers are to be believed, because he was merely reading a script, of course, they landed mostly in the Delaware Bay, Delaware River Basin, Chesapeake Bay area, mostly at Philadelphia, and found themselves among Germans and Dutch and English who wanted nothing to do with them, and so they had to push inland into the mountains, where they ran into the native peoples, who were strenuously against having their land stolen from them.
Yeah. Well, the ones I'm talking about, the survivors, you know, the ones who, the clans who, although, you know, they weren't actually at the battlefield and therefore they were left alive, they were deemed treasonous, so therefore they were shipped off to the colonies and sold off as indentured servants for a period of X number of years, which was essentially slavery.
To some degree, yes. But the clans shaped and reshaped themselves, both in Ireland and in the colonies.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But, you know, that lasted, right, you know, the indentured servitude lasted right up until the time the guy, whoever it was, that was sold, could get his bearings and figure out what was going on and take powder. You and I both know that.
Well,
why do you think all of our ancestors ended up in all those nice, unreachable mountains?
Yeah, trying to get away from people who hated them.
Yeah, exactly.
But because of the nasty attitude that they carried with them, unable to get along with the people who already lived there, in large part.
Exactly. But what I'm getting at is, okay, you know, I'm just like you. I wouldn't call myself pink. I'd call myself fish belly white. I don't go out in the sun much. So you can imagine what would happen if I showed up in Phoenix with a sign saying, I'm here illegally. Then what does a cop do?
Gotta rouse you.
Oh, and if any fundy is listening to this, the last I heard, the biggest category of illegal aliens, they're not Hispanics.
Irish?
No.
No?
Chinese.
Ah. I know there's a substantial illegal... No, see, I resist the use of the word illegal. There's a substantial undocumented Irish population as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can't say as I'll blame them. People have been trying to get out of Ireland for a long time. I would dearly love to be able to get into Ireland. The menu, any, provided it's not Northern Ireland. I would dearly love to be able to get into England.
Well, there's an urge of being dearly loved to be able to sort of get away from all of this.
Yeah, and that sound you heard was my grandfather turning over in his grave because...
yeah, that one.
He was an unreconstructed Scot till the day he died, man.
Sure.
Yeah, I've just been disowned from the hereafter. just by saying I want to get into England because, yeah, bleh. If everybody except, you know, all the Hispanics, legal and otherwise, all of the African Americans, all of the Native Americans. By the way, what kind of papers does a Native American have who's been born on a reservation?
I honestly don't know unless it's some sort of tribal membership card. But that's the inherent problem with all of these so-called nativist groups. I mean, that's what they're called, Susan. These white people who feel like they've been here for a million years. They're called nativist groups. Like this creep. What's his name? This will only take me, Chris Kobach. From Kansas. He's associated with the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR, acting as counsel for the Immigration Reform Law Institute, which is their legal arm.
Yeah, got some news for you about that. FAIR, you know, I mentioned 2007 in Prince William County, they tried a law like this, and it almost bankrupted the county.
Right, blew up in their face in a big way.
Yeah, by the way, the trailer for that is up on the main page. You can watch the video for it. It's fascinating. But the thing is, guess who started that? Guess who provided the law? Guess who wrote the law?
FAIR.
You've got it.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen to Arizona. Their economy is going to crash.
But the point is that I'm trying to reach, Susan, is that these people are called nativist.
Yeah, and that just blows me away. They aren't native.
You know,
I'm no more native.
I mean, it's like that goober Tim James, the gubernatorial candidate in Alabama for the Republican nomination. And maybe we didn't flesh it out enough. But this is, in Republican circles in Alabama, this is the normal one. You know who he's running, against in Alabama for the gubernatorial nomination? Roy Moore. You remember Roy Moore, right?
That name sounds familiar.
Big Ten Commandments rock Roy Moore had to be forcibly removed from the Alabama Supreme Court, Roy Moore.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
He's here's the fun part. Roy Moore has a vast lead over Tim James. And they're both nativists. That's why Tim James has his English-only driver's license examination ad out. But the thing that these things show most clearly and most distinctly
And most hilariously, Susan, do you know what the first European language spoken in the territorial confines of what is now Alabama was?
French.
French.
Yep.
Cheese eating surrender monkeys. Mobile, Alabama was the first provincial capital of what was then later moved to New Orleans and called Louisiana.
Yep.
When the French lost it, the Spanish took it. The second European language spoken in the territorial confines of Alabama was Spanish. Meanwhile, during both of these periods, the dominant languages spoken in the territorial confines of Alabama, and we're talking about well up into the 19th century, are Creek, Chickasaw, Choctaw, and Cherokee. And English only begins to get a foothold, a serious chunk into the 19th century. And this addle-pated goober, and Alabama already has an English-only law on the books, by the way, just in case. I mean, that battle's already been fought. Never mind that no one speaks it. Any more than we speak it here or most anywhere else. But anyway, just to sort of finish this whole thing out, the state of Alabama's driver's license exams cost nothing to offer in those 12 other languages. It's all computer.
Yep.
The software and the translations were done years ago. It costs not a dime. So no matter how many times the Tim James says, makes sense to me, does it to you? No, it doesn't make sense because it's already paid for. And it costs nothing.
Yeah.
I've got to find an email here that came in to me the other night from a listener who worked inside a DMV and pointed out many of those self-same things. The work's all been done. And it actually saves lives. I mean, you do realize, and you're probably old enough, once upon a time, road signs said things more than they showed things.
Yeah.
Slow down, sharp curve ahead, that kind of thing. Well, eventually we transitioned to graphical representations, you know, the arching curve with the arrow to the left or to the right, or the S curve, the chicane, with either the end coming out to the left or the right. You realize why that was? Susan, that wasn't because we didn't do it for the Mexicans. We did it for the illiterate Americans who kept running off roads.
Exactly.
And, here's the fun part. As David in Tennessee notes, it will, however, cost the state of Alabama beaucoup de dollars. That means bunch of books in Alabamian.
Mm-hmm.
To ditch the programs and reinstall English only. So this dumbass fiscal conservative is actually a fiscal profligate, wasting money where money need not be wasted.
In other words, he's another George Bush. Fiscal conservative talking points and then goes out and blows trillions.
On silly, and not just blows trillions, but blows trillions on silly stuff. And I guess if there's one punchline to be had, Susan, it's this. Tim James has spent more money in his campaign than all the other gubernatorial candidates combined. For all that effort, he is running last. I guess there is some justice. But then again, when you're up against Roy Moore, who has the personal weight of Almighty Jehovah God,
yeah,
behind him, I guess you're working uphill as it is.
Live grad. Well, I shall let you go and give my love to Agnes and family.
I sure will. You take care, Susan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. And onward we roll. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's how easy it is to reach the show. And on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Let's keep it rolling. No, doggone it. But at any rate, a little something to share with you, because you'll get a kick out of this. A little something to share with you from our dear friend over at Your RDA of Irony, Eugene Finnerman, who doesn't write merely about occurrences in the dim and dark mists of history, but can occasionally be found wandering through the muck of current events as he has today. Noting a story from the New York Times, headlined, Ukraine Passes Deal Under Hail of Eggs, which says, this is from the New York Times, lawmakers pelted the podium with eggs and catcalls before stalking across the aisle, putting their colleagues in headlocks, and engaging in other tactics not exactly covered by Robert's Rules of Order. Smoke bombs were set off in the chamber. Glue was poured into voting machines. The legislative leader directed the session behind umbrellas held by his aides to protect him from projectiles. Ukraine's parliament was supposed to conduct a weighty debate on Tuesday, revolving around the country's sovereignty and relationship with neighboring Russia, but the proceedings often seemed more like a food fight in a high school cafeteria. At issue was whether to ratify an agreement to extend the lease on a Russian naval base on the Crimean Peninsula in Ukraine by 25 years. In the end, it was narrowly approved with 236 votes out of a possible 450, but not before the parliament appeared to do some damage to its own reputation. The two sides even got into a shoving match and tug of war over a giant Ukrainian flag. That's the straight reportage. That's the real news. Now the fun part. What Eugene offered as an observation on the fracas. Shamed as underachievers, the Republican members of Congress are changing their monthly toupee fittings to a weekend course in martial arts. While respecting the Ukrainian chaos, the Republicans prefer to model themselves after the ninjas. As yellow belt pundit William Crystal explained, you can increase the deadliness of rotten eggs by adding nails to them. Another advantage of hurling the ninja omelet is that most of the dry cleaners in Washington, D.C. are owned by the Unification Church. As further proof of its new militancy, the GOP has filed papers, in the Bahamas, of course, to have the Republican Party reorganized as a street gang. A Frank Luntz focus group will determine the most terrifying but appealing name for the gang. Among the most promising choices are Freedom's Stormtroopers, Tanks for Jesus, and, if a corporate sponsor has his say, Rupert's Rippers. If you haven't signed up for Eugene Finnerman's Your RDA of Irony, you are missing a daily treat and a daily delight. You can get there by going to Finnerman Works, FINERMANWORKS, FINERMANWORKS.com, and clicking on Your RDA of Irony. And speaking of, I don't know, maybe this is a holdover from Moran Monday. But, When you talk about just plain old sprayed roach crazy, do you remember the other night when closing the program I said we have to offer credit where credit is due, and I noted the story of the Ritz-Carlton Naples hotel. That was not a rim shot. That was anyway. And the fact that they were being sued by an employee because the Ritz-Carlton Naples in Naples, Florida, had acquiesced in a demand from a hotel guest. And when you can go and stay at the Ritz-Carlton, you got some bucks. Unless, of course, you're on somebody else's nickel. But in this case, it was apparently a family. But a family had requested that they be served by whites only and by non-foreign accent-carrying servants. Because, you know, the Ritz-Carlton's got all the liveried people and the little uniforms. Right. And they wanted to be served only by white people who didn't have any kind of an accent. Well, guess who's doing business at the Ritz-Carlton? Yeah. The Ave Maria School of Law. You know Ave Maria, you know, the one that's the little planned community put together by the guy who heads Domino's Pizza. That sick bastard. And he's got himself a law school. He's got himself the Hail Mary School of Law, Ave Maria. And they hired Fox News President Roger Ailes to come down and speak truth to them. This is a report from TV News 4, which is somewhere around Naples, and is too much of a delight not to share with you.
He is the head honcho of Fox News and the chairman of the Fox Television Stations Group. Roger Ailes in Naples tonight at the Ritz-Carlton Resort, taking some tough questions, defending his network's claims of being fair and balanced. Four in Your Corner's Rob Coble catching up with him and getting straight to the point. Rob?
Well, Patrick, Fox News has certainly been taking a lot of heat lately. First from the Obama administration, who says the network is biased. Then in hiring Sarah Palin as a commentator. And just last week, two other stars had planned to host shows and speak at a fundraiser for the Tea Party.
Roger Ailes doesn't hold back any punches when talking at the Ave Maria School of Law speaker series. As Fox News continues to grow in the ratings, so does the criticism.
How do you defend to the critics that Fox News is far from being fair and balanced, especially when you got a lineup of Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, Hannity? We know that was just in the news.
Sarah Palin is a contributor to Fox News. Geraldine Ferraro has been a contributor to Fox News for over 10 years. We never had any problems with that. Suddenly we signed Sarah Palin in a similar position and we have a problem. Now, whose fault is that?
But see, there's a problem here, Raj. Sarah Palin is a self-serving moron who hopes to gain further political office. Geraldine Ferraro's political career is over, and she is reasonably intelligent. But, well, that's me.
We think we are fair and balanced. We think the others aren't.
And just recently, Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity both had planned a show/fundraiser for the Cincinnati Tea Party. That news didn't sit very well with Ailes, who immediately made it clear this wasn't going to happen.
Sometimes mistakes happen. If they happen, you go on the air quickly, say this is what happened, this is what we did, and keep moving. And that's what we do.
Ailes, no stranger to politics, having worked in several different Republican presidential administrations.
You got a pretty thick skin in the Nixon administration, so you're battling against the Obama administration from time to time. How do you take the criticism from them? They've been very outspoken.
Well, I don't pay a lot of attention to what people say to me. I never have.
Suddenly we understand the entirety of Fox News. Never mind reality. We'll just do whatever Roger says to do. Today we're all going to dress like ponies.
I don't care what they think of me.
Ailes knows being at the top can be a lonely spot, and that's just fine with him.
What's the most important thing in the future for Fox?
Stay number one and quadruple the size of the audience innovate the television industry. As the technical side innovates and changes, we have to stay with it, with the programming.
Yeah, charming. Interestingly, at that same meeting of the Ave Maria School of Law, can you imagine what security would do if little barefoot and pregnant 14-year-old Mary came wandering up to the front gates of the Ave Maria School of Law, or the front gates, for that matter, of the Ritz-Carlton, Naples, Florida? Jesus, she'd be on the ground, and the little fetus Jesus would be laying on the concrete before he knew what hit him. But, you know, that's no surprise to any of us. No, Roger Ailes announced that, the health care bill doesn't seem constitutional to me. to have government tell you to have to buy something? Mr. Ailes, what if the government required you to buy powder and shot and a trusty bag and a decent rifle? Well, I think that would be an enforcement of... That's the Second Amendment, son, and that's the cornerstone of our liberty. Shh. I reiterate, let's not tell the Goonies that they don't gots to buy nothing, because there ain't no penalties no more. Shh. No 16,000 IRS agents. Shh. No Gestapo. Shh. They're deeply engrossed in their little fantasy world. Let's not disturb it. So lo and behold, we have come up on the end of the second hour of the program, and I think a brief break is called for so we can get things back in order. And then we will jump to it with your phone calls to 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number if you want to get involved. Only an hour left to do it in. Jump right in. The conversation's fine here on America's Liberal Voice. This is The Horn.
you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is a public service announcement.
There's a new type of music program coming to the Horn.
I got a letter from the government the other day. Opened it and read it. It said they were suckers.
They wanted me about a summer or whatever. Picture me buying the scam. I said never. But I won't heed the battle call.
Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
Keep me down K Street.
The People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitch is gone. Kelly half the lose that on the list. And then goes on and on.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
Now, Paul, run out.
Cut your flag, the gal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Brock.
2.5 minutes past the hour, and we go, I hope, directly to the phones. Let's see what's shaking here. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Gerard in Indiana.
Hey, Gerard, long time no talk to you. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Pretty good.
Well, I was just calling in to kind of give you an update, something interesting in our local political scene here. We had an article the other day, front page article in one of our local papers, the Elkhart Truth, about a gathering, I guess it was an all-day affair, at the River of Life Community Church. And the highlight of the day, I guess, was a debate between no less than 5 candidates, Republican candidates, who are lining up for Evan Bayh's seat. And the thing that really stuck out at me in this article was that it was put on by a group of quote-unquote grassroots organizations with names like Concerned Citizens of Michiana, Indiana Patriot Coalition, and a couple of others.
Woo!
And
got a list of winners already in the making there.
Well, it gets better. The thing that stuck out for me was the leaders, and I'm quoting from the article here, the leaders, I guess the organizers of the event, are hoping to have members and non-members alike sign accountability agreements, promising to remain educated about the candidates leading up to November.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
So, you know, the first thing I thought of, well, I guess, you know, are you, if you're signing an accountability agreement, are you, like, putting down your contact information so that, you know, people can get a hold of you later and remind you to go out and vote? and all that kind of
stuff. No, they just want to be able to excommunicate you if you don't vote the wrong way, if you don't vote the right way.
Yeah, but, you know, just in case anybody thought that that, you know, over the listening to the show over the last couple of weeks, I've heard people refer to, you know, some of our Chardonnay sipping, brie eating liberals who don't take the Tea Party movement, you know, as a as something to be reckoned with. One of these five candidates, Richard, I'm going to say Bahney, B-E-H-N-E-Y, is the state Tea Party founder for Indiana.
Nice.
So, you know.
Well, and that was the what was the name of the church where it happened?
The River of Life Community Church.
Okay, because you know one of the things that I most cherish here in my studio, Gerard, is a cup, a drinking cup, a plastic drinking cup, like, you know, it's a giveaway from the Cornerstone Community Church in Floyd's Knobs, Indiana. Any idea where Floyd's Knobs is?
I have never heard of that one.
Well, if you get anywhere near it, stay away from the Cornerstone Community Church, because it's worth remembering that the motto printed on the back of the Cornerstone Community Church's cup of 6639 St. Mary's Road, Floyd's Knobs, Indiana, is Need Field Up? Worship times, Sunday at 10:30 a.m., Wednesday at 6:30, meal provided. Need Field Up?
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, just remember that. And of course, that's not the True Life Community Church. That's the Cornerstone Community Church. I'm sure they probably play each other in softball or sodomy or, you know, something like that.
Well, yeah. Oh, here's another one of the organizations. This took place, this is a little late, this took place on April 17th, but the Michiana 912 Project. And
oh, no.
Yeah, they're out there. They're out, they're in force in Indiana. Well, and the thing about it is that, you know, because Indiana went for Obama in the election, it's like these people are just, I mean, their tails are definitely on fire. And, you know, it gets frustrating for people. There was, they're even running, see, I live in St. Joseph County, which is the far eastern border of my Representative Joe Donnelly's district. And the next district is represented by Mark Sauter, who is a Republican. But they're even running a, you know, Tea Party type, you know, real conservative against him. So these people are just, you know, it's bad enough that, what's the acronym? I can't think of the acronym. Democrat, the Dinos. You know, it's bad enough that I've got a representative that's a Dino as it is. But these people here are just going absolutely crazy. And, but on a lighter note, and I've been meaning to call in on this for some time, because I know, you know, with good reason, you from time to time will list the ratio of hours of right-wing hate radio that is promulgated through the nation on a weekly basis compared to liberal radio. But there was one radio, one terrestrial radio station, a for-profit station, which actually served Elkhart and Elkhart County, which switched from their talk radio format of, you know, Beck, Hannity, Limbaugh, da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
And became, which is really, you know, sometimes there's just a little bright star in the heavens, but it became, went to an what we used to call album-oriented rock, and its call phrase is music for baby boomers, hippie 1340 or whatever the call numbers are. But so they dumped Rush and went to the hippie music.
That's, yeah, but it's got to, isn't that a step forward? I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'll take it. Listen, there is as much comment in Inagata DeVita as in any show that Rush Limbaugh has ever done, okay?
Yeah.
But, you know, all 12 minutes of it or whatever, 22 minutes, I forget.
So I just wanted to call in and let people know, beware, wherever you are, that these Tea Partiers are...
Well, they're noisy and they're armed, and now they want to get loaded while they're carrying their guns.
It's just, you know, and the same thing over and over again, where were these people when Bush was, you know, trampling all over Posse Comitatus? And
you know, you know what their answer to that is? Their answer, Gerard, is, well, that don't matter. I'm here now.
Yeah.
As if they suddenly woke up. They didn't suddenly wake up. They are enraged that one is in the White House.
Yeah.
It's that simple. It really is. I think Tim Wise, with his the brilliant the essay of recent vintage, Imagine If the Tea Party Was Black, absolutely nailed the pelt to the wall. He's absolutely got it. He's got it down to a science. Gerard, it is awfully good to hear from you. I trust all is well.
Yep.
Well, good deal.
Gonna keep on keeping on.
All right, you take care now.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye now.
Gerard, calling from the heartland, calling from Indiana. You know, and I let me say something real quick. You know the fond esteem that I hold all the members of our Horn family in. But I have to say that it does me proud. It really does me proud when I hear from people like Gerard, who are decided, devoted liberals living in the belly of the beast. There's no. Even though Indiana, after just brutal campaigning, went for Barack Obama, it's still, you know, what it is. It's very red. To be either of the Davids in Tennessee or South Carolina, who are unabashedly liberal in their lives and refuse to keep their heads down. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of guts. More than I have. Without a doubt. So just that little, you know, tip of the hat, so to speak, to people who live in places like Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Florida, South Carolina, and don't hide the fact that they're liberals, and that they know that there's a better day and a better way. Mighty proud. Mighty proud. Having referenced Tim Wise's essay, while I'm often loath to just go on a reading binge, I kind of promised myself that I would share this one. I don't know if anyone else has. In verbal form. I hope Tim Wise won't mind me sharing it with you. But this deserves to be read out loud from start to finish. The title again, Imagine If the Tea Party Was Black. Let's play a game, shall we? The name of the game is called Imagine. The way it's played is simple. We'll envision recent happenings in the news, but then change them up a bit. Instead of envisioning white people as the main actors in the scenes, we'll conjure the ones who are driving the action. We'll envision black folks or other people of color instead. The object of the game is to imagine the public reaction to the events or incidents if the main actors were of color rather than white. Whoever gains the most insight into the workings of race in America at the end of the game wins. So let's begin. Imagine that hundreds of black protesters were to descend upon Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia, just a few miles from the Capitol and White House, armed with AK-47s, assorted handguns and ammunition. And imagine that some of these protesters, the black protesters, spoke of the need for political revolution and possibly even armed conflict in the event that laws they didn't like were enforced by the government. Would these protesters, these black protesters with guns, be seen as brave defenders of the Second Amendment? Or would they be viewed by most whites as a danger to the Republic? What if they were Arab Americans? Because, after all, that's what happened recently when white gun enthusiasts descended upon the nation's capital, arms in hand, and verbally announced their readiness to make war on the country's political leaders if the need arose. Imagine that white members of Congress, while walking to work, were surrounded by thousands of angry black people, one of whom proceeded to spit on one of those congressmen for not voting the way the black demonstrators desired. Would the protesters be seen as merely patriotic Americans voicing their opinions, or as an angry, potentially violent, and even insurrectionary mob? After all, that is what white Tea Party protesters did recently in Washington. Imagine that a rap artist were to say in reference to a white president, "He's a piece of shit, and I told him to suck on my machine gun." Because that's what rocker Ted Nugent said recently about President Obama. Imagine that a prominent mainstream black political commentator had long employed an overt bigot as executive director of his organization, and that this bigot regularly participated in black separatist conferences and once assaulted a white person while calling them by a racial slur. When that prominent black commentator and his sister, who also works for the organization, defended the bigot as a good guy who was misunderstood and going through a tough time in his life, would anyone accept their excuse-making? Would that commentator still have a place on a mainstream network? Because that's what happened in the real world when Pat Buchanan employed as executive director of his group America's Cause a blatant racist who did all these things, or at least their white equivalents, attending white separatist conferences and attacking a black woman while calling her the N-word. Imagine that a black radio host were to suggest that the only way to get promoted in the administration of a white president is by hating black people, or that a prominent white person had only endorsed a white presidential candidate as an act of racial bonding, or blamed a white president for a fight on a school bus in which a black kid was jumped by two white kids, or said that he wouldn't want to kill all conservatives, but rather would like to leave just enough living fossils, as he called them, so, quote, we will never forget what these people stood for. After all, these are things that Rush Limbaugh has said about Barack Obama's administration, Colin Powell's endorsement of Barack Obama, a fight on a school bus in Belleville, Illinois, in which two black kids beat up a white kid, and about liberals generally. Imagine that a black pastor, formerly a member of the U.S. military, were to declare as part of his opposition to a white president's policies that he was ready to suit up, get my gun, go to Washington, and do what they trained me to do. This is, after all, what Pastor Stan Craig said recently at a Tea Party rally in Greenville, South Carolina. Imagine a black radio talk show host gleefully predicting a revolution by people of color if the government continues to be dominated by the rich white men who have been destroying the country, or if said radio personality were to call Christians or Jews non-humans, or say that when it came to conservatives, the best solution would be to hang 'em high. And what would happen to any congressional representative who praised that commentator for speaking common sense and likened his hate talk to American values? After all, those are among the things said by radio host and best-selling author Michael Savage, predicting white revolution in the face of multiculturalism, or said by Savage about Muslims and liberals, respectively. And it was Congressman Culbertson from Texas who praised Savage in that way, despite his hateful rhetoric. Imagine a black political commentator suggesting that the only thing the guy who flew his plane into the Austin, Texas IRS building did wrong was not blowing up Fox News instead. This is, after all, what Ann Coulter said about Tim McVeigh when she noted that his only mistake was not blowing up the New York Times. Imagine that a popular black liberal website posted comments about the daughter of a white president, calling her typical redneck trash or a whore whose mother entertains her by making monkey sounds. After all, that's comparable to what conservatives posted about Malia Obama on FreeRepublic.com last year when they referred to her as ghetto trash. Imagine that black protesters at a large political rally were walking around with signs calling for the lynching of their congressional enemies. Because that's what white conservatives did last year in reference to Democratic Party leaders in Congress. In other words, imagine that even one-third of the anger and vitriol currently being hurled at President Obama by folks who are almost exclusively white were being aimed instead at a white president by people of color. How many whites viewing the anger, the hatred, the contempt for that white president would then wax eloquent about free speech and the glories of democracy? And how many would be calling for further crackdowns on thuggish behavior and investigations into the radical agendas of those same people of color? To ask any of these questions is to answer them. Protest is only seen as fundamentally American when those who have long had the luxury of seeing themselves as prototypically American engage in it. When the dangerous and dark other does so, however, it isn't viewed as normal or natural, let alone patriotic. Which is why Rush Limbaugh could say this past week that the Tea Parties are the first time since the Civil War that ordinary common Americans stood up for their rights. A statement that erases the normalcy and Americanness of blacks in the civil rights struggle, not to mention women in the fight for suffrage and equality, working people in the fight for better working conditions, and LGBT folks as they struggle to be treated as full and equal human beings. And this, my friends, is what white privilege is all about. The ability to threaten others, to engage in violent and incendiary rhetoric without consequence, to be viewed as patriotic and normal no matter what you do, and never to be feared and despised as people of color would be if they tried to get away with half the shit we do on a daily basis. Game over. Anytime that Tim Wise sits down to say something about race in America, it becomes required reading. Because there is not a word of that that is not absolutely true. I would add to that last paragraph, that next to last paragraph, where he says that Limbaugh's statement erases the normalcy and Americanness of blacks in the civil rights struggle, not to mention women in the fight for suffrage and equality, working people in the fight for better working conditions, and LGBT folks as they struggle to be treated as full and equal human beings. I would add to that Appalachian people of all colors, all races, all nationalities, who struggle to be treated as human beings in their own country, in their own region, in their own states, their own counties. We thought, for a brief moment yesterday, that the West Virginia School Building Authority was going to do the right thing and provide full funding for a new Marsh Fork Elementary School in western Raleigh County. Silly us. Instead, the West Virginia School Building Authority provided $8.8 million for a new School of the Future, in Kanawha County, nowhere near a mountaintop removal operation, and provided and offered just enough funding to make sure that the Raleigh County School Board couldn't come up with the requisite cash to actually get the school built, the new Marsh Fork Elementary School. It is a cruel, sick, and cynical thing when children's lives are played with in such fashion. And it is a manifestation of the disdain in which rural Appalachian people are routinely and regularly held in this country. As I've said before, the struggle against mountaintop removal is often cast in terms of an environmental struggle. But for me, it is fundamentally and essentially a civil rights and a human rights struggle. A young woman has been sentenced in regard to peaceful protests. A young woman has been sentenced to a lengthy jail term on charges of trespass, obstruction of justice, and other charges, all of them trumped up within a wholly, utterly, and completely corrupt judicial system in this state. She has to turn herself in next week. She faces fines probably near $2,000. And a time in the regional jail that, frankly, someone convicted of battery, actual physically striking another human being, was not subjected. All this young woman did was sit down and say no. No more to the horrors of mountaintop removal. No more to the predation of people who live in communities that have the manifest misfortune of living near some massy monstrosity. No more. She showed more courage in her little finger than any individual working for Massey Energy will ever know, simply by sitting down and saying no. And for that, she is being punished with the full force of the law in this state. Imagine. Her sentence was handed down to her by a magistrate in this state. To give you some sense of what justice means in Appalachia, a magistrate in this state is an elected official who need not even have a high school diploma. A magistrate in the state of West Virginia need not even be literate. It goes almost without saying that a magistrate within the state of West Virginia doesn't have to know a blessed thing about the law. A magistrate in the state of West Virginia is nothing but a piece of political fluff that will respond to whatever force is most profoundly applied to him or her. And in this instance, one magistrate responded to a Massey employee or former employee threatening to slit the throats of a man and his child by imposing 6 months of unsupervised probation on the individual. In another instance, a West Virginia magistrate imposed no jail sentence whatsoever on a woman who literally struck a physical blow against a peaceful, nonviolent, non-resisting leader in the struggle against mountaintop removal. But a young woman, a beautiful, precious young woman whose only fault lay in merely sitting down and saying no, will be subjected to the manifest hell and horror of the penal system of the state of West Virginia. Not a decent meal for 2 months. Nothing in the way of sunlight. Cast in amongst common criminals and violent personages. One person similarly sentenced for a similar act of nonviolence has been in solitary almost the entire time. It's called protective custody, but it is solitary because he runs the risk of having his life taken from him by thugs sympathetic to the coal industry inside the jail. So yes indeed, I do add to the brilliant word and works of Tim Wise the caveat that there is a civil rights struggle in this country that involves citizens of a region that most of this country doesn't even know exists. But the overarching thesis that Tim Wise manifests is so very true. Have you seen the footage of law enforcement officials with great red spray cans of pepper spray aiming them at the faces of brown-skinned protesters in Arizona? I have. Ready at a moment's notice to inflict massive pain upon them. Their crime, the color of their skin. Similar groups, Lily White, are not met by police at all. They are left to parade up and down, engaging in what we termed earlier blue steel masturbation, and talking about taking their country back. Because, as I noted in Parson Brown's film at Link TV, these people believe. They don't know because it doesn't exist. These people believed our founding fathers wanted all people to be free. Except the dark-skinned ones. Except the female ones. Except the white ones who didn't own property. And most assuredly, except the ones whose families and generations had been upon this continent for upwards of 12,000 years at the very least. If you're tired of hearing about the Tea Partiers, I'm sorry. But I feel like it is necessary to keep a light on these people, because there have been times in the history of humanity when small, noisy, dangerous, violent, xenophobic groups have been treated as a sideshow, as inconsequential. Because when they get power, they get deadly. A step forward, if you will. A story from the Crimson White, which is the student newspaper of the University of Alabama, where once I attended. There is a fraternity there called Kappa Alpha. Kappa Alpha prides itself on its Southern heritage. And they have a really stupid party every year called their Old South Ball. Old South. They celebrate their Confederate heritage. And the way they do this is they take dirty pickup trucks and they get their little sorority girl dates who are done up in hoop skirts, all, you know, a la Gone with the Wind and Vivian Leigh. And they drive by and they pick up the dates in the back of the pickup trucks. And then they have a little parade back to the Kappa Alpha chapter house where they have themselves a ball. Finally, in the year 2010, the Kappa Alpha chapter on the campus of the University of Alabama canceled its Old South parade after having previously been caught, among other things, stopping their vehicles in front of Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority's house, Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority being a traditionally black sorority, lingering there as the sorority held an event celebrating its 35th anniversary on the campus of the Capstone. Old South, in the year 2010, 145 years after the cessation of hostilities, in which the South was beaten and humbled, is finally at an end on the campus of the University of Alabama. It did not sit well with members of the student body at the University of Alabama. Brett M. Poulos posted to the online story, as a member of Kappa Alpha Order, see, it's not a fraternity, it's order. As a member of Kappa Alpha Order, I think it's absurd that our national office banned this time-honored tradition. Why? Because the four founding members were all Southern men that had fought in the Confederate Army. They all attended the college that was eventually co-named after Robert E. Lee. This tradition has been going on for 100-plus years. I know guys that talk about their dad doing it and his dad doing it. Granted, they shouldn't have stopped in front of AKA's house, but the tradition shouldn't be stopped. I understand why they banned the Confederate battle flag in the 1990s, because some people are too ignorant to understand that our ancestors actually fought and died for it. National fraternity is too deep-rooted in Southern tradition to stop this classic parade ball. So hallelujah for a tiny, tiny, tiny step forward in Alabama, of all places, when other parts of this country are marching decidedly backwards. A little comic moment, if you will. Even Seth Meyers of Saturday Night Live jumping in on the Arizona debate, and what he says is very well taken. Remarking upon, well, here you go.
Weekend Update with Seth Meyers.
I'm Seth Meyers, and here are tonight's top stories. Greece, which is plagued by financial debt, appealed to its European partners in the IMF on Friday for a $60 billion rescue package. Things are so bad that many have started referring to the country as Greece 2.
Okay, not that one.
This week, Arizona signed the toughest illegal immigration law in the country, which would allow police to demand identification papers from anyone they suspect is in the country illegally. I know there's some people in Arizona worried that Obama is acting like Hitler, but can we all agree that there's nothing more Nazi than saying, show me your papers? There's never been a World War II movie that didn't include the line, show me your papers. It's their catchphrase. Every time someone says, show me your papers, Hitler's family gets a residual check. So heads up, Arizona, that's fascism. I know, it's a dry fascism, but it's still fascism.
Yeah, it is. It is fascism. But why should we be surprised? Fascism is what fascists do. In the meantime, because I mentioned some Appalachian issues a moment ago, this for your consideration. There is a website in this state. It's a website for wingnuts and repiglickens and so forth. It is called West Virginia Red. West Virginians, conservatives, Republicans. And they reprinted something today from the American Spectator. Now, you know the American Spectator is a POS right-wing scandal sheet. And I told you that just, and I proved it last night with the National Mining Association comments about Barack Obama parking his tanks on our lawns, even after he had done the profound outreach of coming to West Virginia, eulogizing the 29 tragically killed miners, and even using the West Virginia Coal Association's very own business motto in the eulogy, coal keeps the lights on, in funeral homes. He didn't say that part. I did. It's true. Even after doing all that, I told you that the right wing would reward President Obama by sliming him. The National Mining Association did, and now so too has the American Spectator, offering a piece called Obama's Mines. The irony of President Barack Obama visiting Beckley, West Virginia Sunday to read a eulogy at the memorial service for those who died in the Upper Big Branch mine accident has not been lost on some White House aides. Notice you're about to hear witness the full-on use of the Fox-style manual. Quote, okay, quote, let me make that clear, quote, if we had our way, we'd be mourning the mining industry, not miners, says a White House aide, whom, I add, editorially and parenthetically, curiously, has no name. Quote, as an environmental issue, we want the majority of these mining-related industries just to go away. Again, no attribution. No, the traditional said a White House staffer who spoke only on condition of anonymity. Why does that language not appear in this post? Because that White House staffer does not exist. In fact, the White House and some Obama administration staffers at the Department of Energy and the Environmental Protection Agency, some nameless, faceless, identityless, wholly a product of the fulminating, half-eaten, tertiary syphilitic brains of some right-winger at the American Spectator. See, I can use the Fox-style manual, too. Have been coordinating with left-wing environmental groups to launch protests in West Virginia over such techniques as, quote, mountaintop removal mining, unquote. Baby, you ain't gotta put it in quotes. It's real. This enabled the EPA to cite such protests as support for their new rulemaking. Earlier this month, the agency imposed rules sharply curtailing that form of strip mining in such states as West Virginia. The rules may end up costing several hundred West Virginians their jobs. May. Even this liar, whoever wrote this piece, because the writer is, of course, anonymous, calling himself the Washington Prowler. Ew. Says may end up because there's no proof. None. Now the Obama administration is looking for ways to reward those groups they coordinated with. According to sources inside the EPA, the agency is attempting to find ways to get funding to several organizations it worked with on the mountaintop mining and other efforts, including Appalachian Voices and Coal River Mountain Watch. Really? There's a check? I haven't heard about a check. Meanwhile, the administration is attempting to identify ways to fund a much more influential pass-through organization, the Appalachian Community Fund, an organization run out of Knoxville, Tennessee. And here's another one of those magic quotes from an invisible, imaginary person. Quote, Appalachian Community Fund is like the acorn of West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee, says a Commerce Department political employee. If we can just get it a few hundred thousand dollars, it can organize for us down there in ways to help us politically, and it's done great things for us with the EPA and other entities. No attribution. No statement that the person, the political employee, making the statement, made the statement only on condition of anonymity. No journalistic tools utilized whatsoever to give any indication that the person is not a product of the tertiary syphilitic mind of the Washington Prowler. But it's on. It's on. Do you think for an instant that there aren't connections, tentacles, if you will, that run from the American Spectator to, say, Massey Energy? that has hated Coal River Mountain Watch like God hates sin for a decade now? Because I don't know if you were noticed it or not, but lo and behold, Massey Energy has hired a PR firm run by a person by the name, and you'll remember this name, Dan Bartlett. Dan Bartlett left the Bush administration as in its communications office and formed himself a sleazy little PR firm that goes to work hammer and tongs day and night, hand over fist, for the likes of Massey Energy. It is from this PR firm that the spin is now emerging that MSHA was the cause, the Miners Safety and Health Administration, that MSHA was the cause of the Upper Big Branch explosion. And now, with that simple phrase, Appalachian Community Fund is like the acorn of West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee. We see where they want to take this. They want to slime grassroots community organizations because they understand organizing is their doom. As that woman with the voice made for print and sounds like she gargles razor blades every 15 minutes, Tammy Bruce said, "We are taking the organizing tactics of the left, whatever that is, and we are putting them to use ourselves, and we will use it to destroy them." They mean it. They mean it. And you know what? I think everybody's well advised to keep an eye out for young 20-something pale white guys walking around dressed as hillbilly pimps. I refer, of course, to James O'Keefe. Because it's on. This American Spectator group specifically named Appalachian Voices and Coal River Mountain Watch because of the work that has been done that has turned the tide on mountaintop removal. The grassroots work has been done in the Coal River Valley by Coal River Mountain Watch. You understand now why at the end of every program I tell you that they are the bravest, hardest working people that I know? Coal River Mountain Watch has been officially targeted by the thugs of the right wing. Appalachian Voices has been targeted because Appalachian Voices has worked tirelessly in conjunction with the other members of the Alliance for Appalachia to create a legislative solution to mountaintop removal via their lobbying efforts for what you already know about, H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act, and S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act. And we draw ever closer to passage of both of them. And it is a race now to the end of this Congress It is a race between the filthy, money-sodden pigs of the PR firm run by Dan Bartlett, hired by Massey Energy, and grassroots organizations like Coal River Mountain Watch, and lobbying organizations like Appalachian Voices, and the other associated groups of the Alliance for Appalachia. It is a race to the end of this Congress to see who can either get these bills passed or stop justice in its tracks. It is important that you note that even if you have advocated for the passage or for the signature of your member of Congress or your senator on one or either of both of these pieces of legislation, even if they've already signed, please, you need to keep up the pressure. If they've already signed, call and thank them periodically and say, please, 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 we must work a little bit harder. We must put a little bit more energy into this to get this out of committee and to a vote on the floor. The signatories to S-696 are much fewer. I'm not sure. I don't even think that a man who is elected on the platform of my main issue will be the environment when I get there, Jeff Merkley of Oregon, and who sits on the committee that has jurisdiction over S-696, I don't think he's even signed on to it yet, if I recall correctly, last I saw the list. There are liberal senators who have not yet done the right thing. And they need your urging. And we must have a sense of urgency about this. Because we know now that the right wing is going to start trying to slime good, decent, hard-working people who actually live day to day with the nightmare of mountaintop removal. And the only way to prevent that is to be proactive. So that's the program tonight. Thank you for joining in. Thank you to everyone who makes all of this work. Thank you to Lottie and Sue. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox, our chief engineer, technical advisor, and host of All Foxed Up here on the Horn. Thanks to Ben Birch for everything he does to make this program reach you. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to Matt Osborne, our Southeast correspondent, Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. And thank you to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. And as I have already said, massive thanks go out always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Lodge, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, good evening. Now, a minute and a half past the hour, and we begin this Tuesday evening edition of The Horn with a realization on my part. Everything is making so much sense now. It's aliens. No, really. It's aliens. One of the stories that I had in the stack, and it was not a Moran Monday nominee. It was just a story in the stack. One of the stories I had in the stack last night was this Stephen Hawking story that's out there. The headline, Stephen Hawking, Humans Should Fear Aliens. And I didn't get to the story, and in a way I'm glad, because... And this is no sort of mysticism or anything. It's just a matter of things requiring a little bit of time to sort of rattle around inside the remnants of what remain of my brain before connections get made. And that's this. The connection is this. It's aliens. It's the aliens. All of these things, all of this weirdness, all of this bizarreness, it's the aliens. They walk among us. Really. It's that old Twilight Zone episode, the monsters are due on Maple Street, only they're really here. The story, of course, first. From over at Huffington Post. World-renowned scientist Stephen Hawking believes extraterrestrial life almost certainly exists. And humans should be extremely cautious about interacting with it. Reaching a conclusion similar to that reached by Carl Sagan before him, that's my observation, not from the article, Stephen Hawking said to my, and I'm not going to do the little machine voice, I have too much respect for Stephen Hawking, so if that's what you were expecting, You 666 people, just forget it. No, this is not the Family Guy. Nah, you're not 666 people. You just know me too well. That's what it boils down to. Anyway, Hawking said, to my mathematical brain, the numbers alone make thinking about aliens perfectly rational. Apparently, there's a new TV series coming up on the Discovery Channel. You know, the same people who are host. Can you imagine this? Have I got this right? Is this marble rattling in the right places in the big pachinko game that is my head? The Discovery Channel is going to host a series featuring Stephen Hawking called Stephen Hawking's Universe. And they're also hosting a series called Sarah Palin's Alaska. Have I got that right? Anyway,
Hawking says, to my mathematical brain, the numbers alone make thinking about aliens perfectly rational. The real challenge is to work out what aliens might actually be like. And then this is the pull quote from the Discovery Channel release. He suggests that aliens might simply raid Earth for its resources and then move on. We only have to look at ourselves to see how intelligent life might develop into something we wouldn't want to meet. I imagine they might exist in massive ships, having used up all the resources from their home planet. Such advanced aliens would perhaps become nomads, looking to conquer and colonize whatever planets they can reach. He concludes that trying to make contact with alien races is a little too risky. He said, if aliens ever visit us, I think the outcome would be much as when Christopher Columbus first landed in America, which didn't turn out very well for the Native Americans. He has a point. No getting around it. I think the law of averages, although I'm no mathematician, but I would suspect that the law of averages would sort of say that there are as many, if there is indeed alien life out there, that there are as many species less developed than us as there are more developed than us. What I think is interesting, however, is Hawking's observation about merely the casually horrifying nature of contact. Because while there were some Europeans who actively went about the business of poisoning the native population of the Western Hemisphere, it was as much a function of negligence as it was of overt evil. The Europeans lived in a universe in which they simply assumed that everybody had smallpox, that everybody got the measles, that everybody got chickenpox, that everybody suffered from the flu. Sadly, and to the chagrin of the native populations, that was not true. Most of that stuff was unknown, absolutely unknown to the native populations of North and South America, or whatever it was that the native peoples called it in the case of the Mexica in Kemenahuac, in the heart of the one world. Didn't exist. The Bible people, the biblical literalists and the lunatic Mormons are looking for means whereby to note that, well, you know, the Mormons are looking for ancient Jews hiding out in Indian tribes. I forget if they're Nephites or morons or, you know, whatever the Mormons consider them to be. And, of course, there was a lot of that running out throughout the rest of Western culture as it came here. And it never dawned on them. It never dawned on them at all that what they had stumbled on was Eden. Eden itself. Never, never know that, no. But think about it. No sickness,